Thank you very much for joining us this Saturday morning here on WWNC. I'm here with Agnes Cheek, the executive producer and engineer. I'm also with Alice, who happens to run our office. And before the break, we were discussing some of the structural issues that surround universal life insurance policies. Alice, I see you have your finger up, your polite finger. You have that up. You wanted to say something?
Well, I just wanted to tell all our listeners that Glenn has a practice. It's Wessel Investment Counsel. We are a fee-only independent registered investment advisory firm. And if you would like to come in and get a free portfolio analysis with Glenn, just give us a call at 232-2000.
That's right. The good part about that free portfolio analysis is that you'll not have to endure any kind of sales talk, nothing at all. We're not going to try to sell you anything. We'll run your portfolio through our professional portfolio management software. And you'll get to see the sector breakdown, the asset allocation, how much interest rate risk you have, how much credit risk, modern portfolio theory statistics. In short, you'll be able to see your portfolio pretty much the way a professional would see it, which is completely different from the way you would view it on your brokerage statement. So you'll be able to see fees and expenses, all that good stuff. So before the break, we were talking about universal life, and we wanted to continue that discussion to talk about some of the problems that kind of befell the industry in the 80s and kind of make mention of the fact that some of those problems still exist, but they're kind of latent right now. So back in the 80s, when interest rates, and this is the early 80s, like 1982, I'm going to estimate, when interest rates hit maybe 16 to 18% for, the prime rate, these universal life policies were very attractive because when an insurance company illustrates the policy, when it's selling the policy to you, it gives you a policy illustration. It's not a projection. It's an illustration based on assumptions which may or may not, and the emphasis is on not, come true, because the likelihood that those assumptions are going to come true is really low. So back in those days, the insurance industry would illustrate these policies having these tremendous cash values based on the ongoing interest rate environment of 16 to 18%. So people would be skipping their premiums, paying less than they were initially agreeing to pay. And 5-10 years later, after interest rates floated down, they would get a letter in the mail saying, you need to make big premium payments, otherwise the policy is going to lapse. So instead of having big policies with big cash value, people were getting notices that unless they made extra premium payments and did it for quite a long period of time, they're not even going to have any insurance. So the industry came out with all kinds of bells and whistles and flexibility, and as expected, it was misused to some extent by the public, and in conjunction with the fact that these policies were illustrated using long-term assumptions that were not realistic in any manner, it created all kinds of letdown for the policy owners. So now we have universal life policies that are very similar to the way they used to be. There are more varieties of universal life, but in this segment we'll be talking about traditional universal life that's interest sensitive based on short-term interest rates. So let's talk about some of the structural problems. Like whole life insurance, the cash value returns for universal life are tied to short-term rates. So if you're considering such a policy as a long-term investment vehicle, ask yourself, why would you want to be tied into short-term interest rates on a long-term investment? It doesn't seem to stand the test of reason if you really scrutinize it. If you think about the returns of treasury bills, which are short-term in nature, you'll find that compared to inflation, treasury bills really haven't done much to outpace inflation at all over the last many, many decades. Let's go back 8 decades and and say that's true, because I believe that it is true. I don't have statistics for you at the moment. So if you have a long-term policy that's based on short-term rates, you're not getting the long-term kick that you could have by owning other assets that admittedly may vary more in terms of their pricing on a daily basis or a monthly basis. But over 10 or 20 or 30 years, that investment, given that extra time, could work out much more nicely than something that's just based on short-term rates. As an example, short-term rates right now, according to the Fed, if you were to look at the Fed funds rate, is between 0.25%. So if you were to go in the Treasury market, you're going to find short-term rates around 1%. It could very well be that a universal life policy has some minimum guarantee, but that minimum guarantee is not likely to be very much. Now, let's take a look at what Social Security implemented as its cost of living adjustment for 2009. We have very low interest rates, which ostensibly means that the interest rates associated with universal life policies would be very low at this point. Yet, we had an inflation adjustment from the Social Security Administration of, are you ready for this? 5.8%. So, how on earth does your universal life policy keep up with inflation when the interest credits are at such a low rate? That's not the only problem with universal life. And I'm not saying that they're bad investments. I'm just saying that before you get involved with such an instrument, you need really to kind of pay attention to the fine detail to make sure that you understand what it is that you're going to be investing in. Because if you try to get in and get out, that's a recipe to lose money, because most policies are sold by agents and the commissions are very real, so they have surrender charges. The insurance company is not going to want to let you escape very readily. So before we take a break, I'm going to make a quick mention of the fact that we are still seeking an advisor who would have some book of business available to transfer. If there are any wirehouse brokers out there who are not happy with the commissioned selling environment and would like to make the transition over to the fee-only side of the business, I would very much like to hear from you. Our number is 232-2000. So anyway, my name is Glenn Wessel. I'm here with Alice Wessel and Agnes Cheek. That takes us to the end of this segment. We'll be back in just a moment.